touch before. So. So I take this saba of speaking on spiritual subjects seriously. And I struggle a lot before I come. First of all, trying to figure out the format of the class, who is the audience. The reason why I do a little bhajan is because, you know, speaking requires, it's really an interesting thing, but you have to speak to one mind, actually. So it's good to have everyone here, and because people work late in the city, around about this time you can be confident that you have your audience. And varieties of people. There are people here in the audience who've been devotees for 40 years. There are people here for the first time. So, what subject to speak on? I like sometimes to speak about prema bhakti, love of Godhead, directly. Sometimes Krishna's pastimes. So that's a struggle. And the subject itself is a struggle to speak on. Humility. First of all, you can't speak on something that you are not. Even when you come up here and you're going to speak on humility, there's a real meditation for the speaker to actually keep a mood of humility. And that's why in any spiritual text, there's always prayers first. Because the mind moves where the body is. There's a thing called ritual. Ritual sometimes has a bad name because it becomes stale or dry. But really what ritual means is to conform yourself to something higher than yourself. Just even the ritual of folding your hands. It brings your consciousness in a certain place. These hands. This actually literally means, when Sadhu in India told me, what this literally means is these hands, which have been used in a selfish or prideful way, are now for you. That's the mood of humility. There's one great Vaishnav text that describes bhakti called Bhakti Sandarbha. And it describes one of the items of devotional service is called Pada Sevana. Pada Sevana means to, it literally means, Pada means the feet, to serve the feet. What does serving the feet mean? It doesn't mean just serving the feet, it means humble service. Humble service. And it says it's not just an action, it's not just where you put your body flat out, it's the consciousness that is there. The consciousness is, and I'm going to explain how this is humility and not some psychological aberration. The consciousness is actually, I am inferior. I am inferior. Like this. So generally when someone speaks on a spiritual subject, prayers, and what do prayers do themselves? Really what prayers are, is prayers create the humble position. Prayer also means entreaty or to beg. Prayers is actually there's a type of prayer that goes something like this. Hare Krishna. Prayers are something like this, really. You have an object, and you glorify that object. Right? And then prayers are an expression of your subordination to that object. You glorify the object. And you move yourself in the humble position. And what this enables one to do is to experience love or mercy. It's just like a child. If a child, no matter if the child doesn't appreciate what the parents give the child and think they deserve more, how much love do they feel? But if the child appreciates what the parents give and doesn't feel entitled for it, how much love do they experience? You can give the child the world, but if he's feeling entitled, he's not appreciating what he gets, and he thinks he's deserving, there's not much mercy that's experienced. There's not much love that's experienced. So this concept of humility is essential to actually fill the heart with love. Because if you have a sense of entitlement and you don't appreciate the gifts of the divine, what do you feel? When I was young, I don't know why it was on the television at that time, but my parents were watching a show. And you know, in those days, there weren't many channels. There was two, there was four, there was five. There was seven, there was 11, and there was 13. And there was a show, and somehow it was about a Yiddish folktale called the Tales of Shalom Aleichem. And there was a nice song that went. So I'm trying to warm up the audience, but not too hot. Aveinu Shalom Aleichem. Aveinu Shalom, Shalom, Shalom. And I was watching it, and you know, something just struck me. Because there was a very poor man, and he gets to go to heaven, right? And he's so pious. God comes and says, you can have whatever you want. He's just the poorest man imaginable. And it stuck in my mind. I had to be like 7 years old for 55 years. It is stuck in my mind. And the person, God, you can have whatever you want. He said, can I have a roll and butter? But how much a person like that can feel love? Appreciating so much the simplest thing. So this humility is important. So I was actually really struggling with it because I wanted to get a definition. I wasn't satisfied with the dictionary definition. Because the dictionary definition says low, worthless, modest. You know, and a good definition cannot be too broad. It can't include things that don't belong in it. Right? If I define this, this is a musical instrument. It's not a good definition. Because if I say that to someone, it could be a guitar, it could be a drum, it could be... And it can't be too narrow either. So a good definition. So when you think of humility, I was trying to think, okay, can a person be self-confident and be humble? Is low self-esteem humility? Because a person who has low self-esteem, they feel worthless, they feel low. Are they humble? Codependence, is that humble? Someone gets attached to someone and dedicates their lives to following their whims. So I was really struggling. And I'm going to explain to you the process, because this is a new class. If I'd given one of the seminars before, I don't have to prepare. But I prepared something new. So I'm just trying to figure out. So then what I do is I call up one student friend of mine who's a brilliant professor of philosophy. And we discuss the points. What is it? What is it? What is it? Really getting it down. Because if you don't get the essence of something, you see, in giving a class, especially you lecture on something, you know, let's say sometimes you lecture on a text, you have to understand the one point. But what is the one point? So I really have to get, what is this humility? So I was struggling with it. And then I was parking my car in New York. So you know how it was? It was Tuesday, it was Monday at 9:30, and the car had to be moved to the other side. So you pull the car to the other side and you wait in the car. So I was preparing the class on East 98th Street, off of 30th. I'm sitting in the car preparing the class. And then I'm reflecting on, I'm going to explain the process. And I think part of the process is together we're going to figure this out. I was thinking of my sister-in-law. My sister-in-law now is in the last stages of cancer, stage 4 cancer. Even my oldest brother, that's his wife, he's accepted now that she's going to go. And then she was put in the hospital, and then her sister came. And her sister, very nice lady, and she felt some relief. And then I was starting to think, this is something like humility. When you actually feel dependence. When you actually feel, it's something like that. Not just feeling low, but being happy low. There's a difference. You may be low and being accepting it. And when do you accept it? You accept it when you have shelter. It's feeling shelter and feeling happy in that shelter. So I was getting something there. Because I was just thinking, she felt relief. Her sister is kind of a healer and a comfort. And she was in need, recognizing her need. So it's something like this. I'm trying to recognizing and accepting our dependence. I still wasn't completely satisfied. But I was getting there. It's something like that. This weekend, just to keep you all alive, at the Thursday evening, little tires, working, whatever it is, some stories too. This weekend, I have a conference once a year of young Vaishnav scholars. Started it 10 years ago. Now we have 4 professors out of the 10 or 15 people now. It's a group of 10. We have 4 that already are placed as professors, Vaishnavas. We have different presentations. So we invited Kasuba to come up this weekend too. He's actually part of that group too. And so he gave a presentation on the book he's writing. So I thought one of the points he mentioned was really nice, and I was thinking for my lecture. You know, a child goes to the refrigerator. He gave this example, it's nice. And the child takes food, right, and feels he's entitled to it. Doesn't realize how the food got there, what his parents had to do to work for it, even what role God has in creating things. It's that lack of realization that we are part of something greater than ourselves that we are dependent on. So something like that, that dependence, but a happy dependence. I thought of something like a child. I'm trying to focus the idea. It's like a child. A child with the mother, right, is happy, completely dependent on the mother, and feeling love because one is sheltered. And the child doesn't want to move from that position. The child doesn't want to control the mother. I am independent. The child is happy in that feeling. And when one actually feels true humility in the heart, you can't move the person from that position by jai, jai, jai. Does not want to move from that position because one is feeling a connection of love and dependence. So what I want to do in these classes, but one other thing happened. I was struggling, trying to find this idea, and then I came upon some commentaries on the Shikshastaka from a book called Brihat Bhagavatamrita. And I read one commentary from a scholar, and then it was an aha moment. Yes, he's really defined humility in a way that I can take that concept and distinguish it from low self-esteem. I can take that concept and keep it when one is bold and confident. I can take that concept and distinguish it from codependence. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to define that and maybe read a little from that commentary and actually discuss that. Now, it's important. Actually, humility is important. In our tradition, it's essential. Lord Chaitanya, the founder of the Hare Krishna movement, Krishna himself, he only composed 8 verses. And the 3rd verse, he said it was so important to the development of bhakti and to develop the goal of life, which is a heart filled with devotion, which is happiness. He said it is so important that you should wear it around your neck and raise your hands and announce this verse to the world. In fact, Lakshmi Prabhu and myself, we have a great friend in Vrindavan. One of the people that you should visit in Vrindavan, a real sadhu, he tattooed this verse around his neck. And the verse is about what's called utter humility. Humility to the topmost degree. And before he reveals this verse, see, with Lord Chaitanya, he was trying to develop the loving sentiments to the divine to the highest degree. This was his mission. And to achieve that mission, he spent the last 18 years of his life in a little room called the cave. In Sanskrit, it's called Gambhira. And he was chanting Hare Krishna. He was chanting mantra, focusing his mind on mantra, which draws out the spirit of love within one's heart. in relationship to the object of love, which is the divine in names. And he was constantly doing it. And he was nourishing it by developing a relationship with the person or who is named, which is the divine, by hearing the most beautiful singing of Sarup Damodar, one of his most confidential associates, who is singing the most beautiful songs of the love of Radha and Krishna. Radha Krishna Prana Mora Yugala Kishora Jivane Marani Gati Arona. Songs. And Ramananda Roy, who is telling these stories of devotion, and he's chanting, and then he looks at them and he says to them, now I am going to tell you the means to awaken divine love in your heart. And then he looks at them and he says, one should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street, more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, ready to offer all respects to others, not wanting any respect for oneself. In such a state of mind, one will have so much love in one's heart that one can chant always. One time I was visiting one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, who Prabhupada was very affectionate to, very supportive of Prabhupada. His name was Bhakti Vaibhav Puri Maharaj. He's known as the younger Puri Maharaj. He was 92. The older Puri Maharaj was 100. He's known as the younger Puri Maharaj. And I came into his room in the morning, and he had just finished his bhajan, chanting all day, chanting all morning, and then he looked at me and he said, Kirtaniya Sadahari, Kirtaniya Sadahari, always chant, always chant, always chant. Like this. So Lord Chaitanya said, this is the key. This is the key. St. Augustine, he said there are three most important practices to awaken the true nature of the self. First one is humility. Can anyone say what the other two were?
Intelligence?
What?
Intelligence?
Intelligence.
Surrender.
Surrender.
Simplicity.
What?
Simplicity.
Simplicity.
Tolerance.
You know what he said? The three most important practices are humility, humility, and humility. Those are the three most important practices. Without that, you can't have knowledge. You're not humble. In Bhagavad Gita, it's one of the main qualities of knowledge is humility. Because you're an illusion about yourself. The nice thing, you know, we may be a particle of consciousness, of the supreme consciousness. But size does not compromise one's ability to love and to be happy. In fact, an inflated conception of your worth does. Very. Actually, this verse, Trinadapi Sunichena Tarodapi Sishan, Lord Chaitanya wrote 8 verses. That's the third. The second says, Namna It says God has invested potencies, many in all his names, his full potency. And if you can avoid offense, you will experience the full potency of God's divine names. Avoid aparat. Radha means worship. Aparat, to distance yourself from worship by offense. So then, now that he's told them that, recently I was up, I met a friend of mine. He was at the teacher training. He met him also up there. Satyanarayan. I was talking to him afterwards. And we were talking about Shastra. So one person came up and said, why do you study the sacred texts? Right? He's a very big scholar. Why do you study the sacred texts? Well, the first thing he said is, actually, it's a meditation. It's not just an intellectual exercise. When you read spiritual texts, it's a yoga. It's a concentration. It's a meditation. I've experienced that. I had this one incredible student, and he traveled with me for 2 years. And I taught him the first and second cantos of the Bhagavatam. And he would listen so intently. And it's an experience of the divine in message. You can get the divine in sound, mantra, and shastra or sacred text is the divine in message. So you meditate on the message, it's not just words. It's a manifestation of that divine potency, you feel it. But another thing he said, but really, when you study the sacred texts, what you really learn is how to avoid offense. Because if you avoid that, the full potency of the object of devotion manifests. So, let's now define it. And the way we're going to define it is, well, I'm going to give a definition, I'm going to discuss the definition, I'm going to read maybe from the commentary of the definition, where I found satisfaction. And it's so important to develop, it's not an external thing, it is an internal thing. And it's so important to develop the appropriate internal things. Plato actually discussed this. He gave the analogy of a shoe. Now, I don't know, later someone commented on it, because he said, your techniques is not important itself. It's your goal or intention that's important. And he gave the example of a shoemaker. It's not good or bad. But let's say you're a shoemaker for the Nazi party, and you're making their boots. See, it's the intention. It's your goal. So without this foundation of dependence, humble dependence, deep humility, there's no question of experiencing mercy. Our foundation for developing love in our heart is experiencing kindness. If you have pride and a sense of entitlement, there's nothing anyone can give you that you will feel love in receiving it. And declare a spoiled child. Radhanath Swami gave one story where he visited this rich family in India, and they took him downstairs to one of the rooms. And in that room, there was every toy in the world. But the child was spoiled and didn't feel any love for their parents. So if you don't have a sense of I'm dependent on something greater than myself, then you never feel love and mercy even if you're getting it and no matter what you get. And you feel no love in your heart. It's essential. So we have to, and actually by studying this, really studying this, why do we study it? It really makes you introspective and look at your life and see what arises from your heart. The sense of wanting to control, the sense of independent authority in so many circumstances. And when someone is genuinely humble, whenever that sense arises of control, this humility just arises in the heart. It doesn't allow it to move any place. I think one way this today, and I'm very conscious of the time. You know, I have about 20 minutes to start the first part of it, and then some cure time. But I want to give examples. Maybe I'll start with examples of humility. We'll get to the definition last. Okay? I'll give you a meditation. Think of a person who exhibited humility that you were convinced was connected to a deep inner sense in the heart. And what was that feeling in that person's heart? Who is that humble person? Is it attractive to you? Legitimately humble person. I'll give you some examples. Well, actually, there's a nice... Let me start with... Let me start with a quote from Prabhupada. His disciple says to Prabhupada, his name is Rupeti Nanda. I remember him. He says, Prabhupada, you must be higher than the Paramahamsa stage, Prabhupada. Paramahamsa is the topmost stage of devotion. You must be higher than the Paramahamsa stage. Prabhupada says, no, I am lower than you. I am the lowest of all creatures. I am simply trying to execute the order of my spiritual master. This is not artificial, and this is what I want to describe. It's not a contradiction. And it's not a contradiction either that Prabhupada may have understood that he had certain abilities. It has nothing to do with that. Because when you have legitimate humility, you understand that whatever you have is given by God, and whatever inspiration you have is coming also. So you never claim. In Bhagavad Gita, there are five factors of action. One is the doer. That concept that by me alone, I can do. There's other factors. And the endeavor must be there. But ahamkara means thinking I am the only doer. We are so dependent. In fact, one exercise for humility in spiritual life that's given in the world by a great acharya, Ramanuja, because a lot of people ask, how can I be spiritual in the world? He gives different meditations, and one meditation is to constantly meditate on the people and situations that gave you whatever quality you have. And never... Yes?
I just wanted to say a quote. I don't know who exactly said it was from Star Wars, but do or do not, there is no try.
What's that?
Do or do not, there is no try.
There is no...
So it's either you do or you do not, but
yeah,
there is no try. So you do not try to do something or you try not to do it. It's either you do it and you fail or you succeed, or you do not do it and you fail or you succeed.
And
there is no try.
Okay, thank you.
Yoda.
Yeah, Yoda.
What's that?
Yoda said that. Yoda.
Oh, wow, we're getting to some very high authorities. I admit that I was in a time warp and missed Star Trek.
Star Wars.
I don't even I saw 2001 Space Odyssey. That's what But besides that, let me just explain. Here's an example. We'll give some examples, right? And these are examples of sadhus that I met in India. Satyaraj, you remember our friend Mangal Maharaj. Mangal Maharaj met Prabhupada in 1950. Prabhupada asked him to go to rest with him, but he couldn't go because his guru had other work for him in India. But he came 30, 40 years later, and we met him in New York. He's a very humble man. I remember giving class in the Brooklyn Temple. He would sit there. Very learned person, very nice. So I became his friend. So he invited me to the festival of the disappearance of his guru in Vrindavan. So when I went there, he said, "Do you know who is upstairs?" I said, "Who?" Prabhupada's godbrother, Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj. And he was so old that the eyelids were hanging over his eyes. He was over 100 years old. So I went upstairs and I was sitting there with him. I was sitting there with him, and he was talking, and he's so old, and because it's on the disappearance day of the spiritual master, and on his appearance day, the disciples fast till midday, and they engage in glorification and chanting. So, a lot of people in the Gaudiya tradition are Bengalis in India. It's called Gaudiya. Gaudiya practically means Bengal. And they traditionally know that they have good appetites. And especially when they're monks, their appetites are even bigger. So they run in, and one monk comes in and says, "Time for the feast! All the Vaishnavas, that means devotees, must come." And I'm sitting there, and it's this stampede. All the Vaishnavas must come, stampede. So I'm just sitting there, kind of bewildered what's going on. And I see this old man walking. Right? Downstairs, he's walking. And his servant said to him, "Maharaj, where are you going? You know we'll bring the feast up to you." You know, see, he heard that statement, all the Vaishnavas must come, right? So he turned to him and he said, "When the Vaishnavas command, I must obey." What is the essence of that? This is what I'm going to describe at the end. And I think it's so key and important to our spiritual life to understand what it is and to try to follow it. Because the body will follow the mind. That's part of spiritual life. You have to put yourself in a body where the consciousness will follow. You go like this. Go like this. Go like this, different consciousness will follow. A lot of spiritual life is putting your body in the right place to help your mind go in the right place. So what is that? Here's another nice one. He's still alive. Again, I wish you had met him, but you never met him. It would be great. Dr. Fakirmohan. He's in 87 years old. He generally comes to the festival I hold every year in Puri. And he joined the ashram when he was 15 years old. So for 70 years he's been chanting 64 rounds of Hare Krishna every day. For 70 years. blissful soul. And he went to school. And he got a PhD in Sanskrit and a Doctor of Literature. He just finished his Doctor of Literature on the history of Gaudiya Vaishnavism in Ariya. Amazing. And he's a Sangeet Acharya. If you hear him sing, you can't believe it. He's very, very learned. But he's very humble. So I see him in the streets of Vrindavan. And even though he's so old, anytime an ISKCON sannyasi is in, he wants to meet him and offer respects. Oh, oh, where? So I meet him. I see him out. The place I was staying. And he said, is Parthasarathi Goswami here? I can't find him. I know where he is. He said, let's go. So we go together. And I know where the house he's staying. And we go in there. And this is the glory of India. You meet very great souls. And he comes and he's offering respect to someone who is 30 years younger than me, who didn't grow up in a spiritual life. He's offering respects. Always. So then he comes and we ask him, can you sing Mangala Geetam? Mangala Geetam is this song explaining the sentiments of Radharani when Krishna is taken from Vrindavan by a fool. And I'm telling you, Stevie Wonder, Ray Charles, Aretha Franklin, no one has anything on Dr. Rajamohan. He is like belting out this song, you know, and they use these hand movements too. It's amazing. Then Parthasarathi says to him, excuse me, but my mother has come to Vrindavan. And you know, in the Hare Krishna movement, we were enthusiastic in the early age, and we kind of left our parents and our families. And now she's come, and I haven't seen her much. I said, I will also go. He said, No, I will come. So we go in, and Parthasarathi is British family from Oxford. Mother, very fine kind of lady. Curly gray hair, simple clothes, a little different than my mother. He will not come out of the bathroom unless it's full decoration. A little different, but you know, more rabbinical. So he comes out, and we come in there, and this Dr. Fakir Mohan falls down and pays respect to the mother. Full respect. And Parthasarathi Goswami is like, and then looks at the mother and says, mother, this is Dr. Fakir Mohan. He is Naishtaka Brahmachari. That means he's lifelong celibate. He is a Sangeet Acharya, Acharya of singing. He is the professor, the chairman of the Department of Sanskrit at Utkal University. And then he starts chanting verses. That if one becomes a pure Vaishnav, 17 generations are liberated. And then those generations, he's going on. And then he says, he looks at the mother and says, this is our culture. And then he says, no, we feel it. This is the Vaishnava. Just another story from a little different perspective. In Radhanath Swami's book, you read about Ramesh Baba. Some of you read that book. I also went to see him. And somehow I was coming there, I was doing kirtan in Barsana. Radharani's place, this is the most beautiful place in all of Vrindavan. And on one hill, he has this place where he used to just stay with Radhanath Swami with the pythons and the dacoits and all the things that live there. Now is a beautiful temple. And he lives like up in the sky. You got to walk, and there's like a thing, like a plank that walks over there. And we're just doing kirtan, and his assistant says, "Do you want to see Maharaj? You want to see Maharaj?" He said, "We don't want to disturb. No, no, come, come, come." And we come in, and he's sitting on his bed, and he's eating soup. So it's just... And you know, generally speaking, one way to look at humility is how you relate to others. Material consciousness, I explain this very often, it means that your desire and the desire to control things around your desire becomes prominent in your consciousness. That's not humility. That's material consciousness, that's pride. Your desire becomes prominent. You see the world according to your desire. Right? Like everyone is hot here. Right? But if I was cold, then I would say, shut off the air conditioning. You see, because I would be seeing the world according to my desire. But a spiritual person, a loving person, sees the world according to the desires of others. And in fact, at the highest platform, there is a shift of this consciousness completely. It's described. This great saint was describing, not indirectly, he was very humble, but he was describing this moment where in the tradition that there is a higher level of love that comes and descends. It's called bhava. And he was describing the shift in his consciousness. And what was the shift in his consciousness? He said, "I was seeing everything as an object. Then I became the object. And then he said, "I was captured." Which means what? Completely controlled. There was another authority that was supreme and surrendered to it. It's kind of like the body. I give this example. The hand is part of the body. I gave this last time. In Sanskrit, it's called anga. The body is called angi. The hand is part of the body. And when it's functioning properly, what happens? The desire of the body becomes prominent. If it had sentience, the individual desire of the hand. And then what happens? There's relationship and there's nourishment. There's relationship and there's nourishment. And there's love, actually. There's energy. So in the highest state of love, you realize that you are part of something greater than yourself. And the will of that becomes supreme. And when you experience that authority, that divine perfection, you give up your own. You become humble. And then love flows from your heart. It's a feeling that's flowing from the heart. And that feeling is humility. And it's non-different than the nature of the soul. And when someone has that... So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to read the verse and commentary. And I really don't have as much time as I want. But I want to complete this. So listen carefully. So this is the definition of humility. The wise men call humility that feeling which makes the most qualified person considered oneself to be low and unqualified. Intelligent practicing devotees should follow in the footsteps of those in whose hearts this humility is fixed with their words, activities, intelligence, and they should never act contrary to this. Now listen to the commentary. The above-mentioned humility, which makes the most qualified person consider oneself to be low and unworthy, is not ordinary humility. It is the natural condition of a surrendered soul who has illumined his spiritual self by returning to his constitutional position. So what happens is, the soul becomes illumined. And one's starting to realize that. When a fortunate person who has surrendered to the lotus feet, Lord's lotus feet, by the mercy of a bona fide teacher, advances on the path of devotion, he will experience the authority of God more and more. It's just like the hand is realizing, I'm part of the body, I'm part of the body. It's the desires of the body that are most important. And by following the desires of the body, I'm serving everything and serving myself. So that becomes so prominent. The practicing devotee will ultimately give up all his own false authority, throwing into the ocean of God's authority by means of full surrender to the Lord's feet, and thus become a liberated soul. So just think of this, right? What it means is, don't they say in yoga classes, let go, let go, let go. What are you letting go of? You're letting go of your control. Just think how many times. Now, as long as he is in his material body, he will have to deal and speak with people of the world. But as soon as he senses the slightest feeling of personal authority coming to him, he feels greatly upset. Personal. I am the controller. Someone says something wrong about him. No, I am the controller. One other story. Krishnadas Babaji, who also in that, I also knew him. He was always chanting Hare Krishna fully. Hare Krishna, always speaking. So he was non-denominational, non-institutional. So he would go from one temple to another within the Gaudiya Mathas. So sometimes there's politics that happen. So one day, he would just go and chant. One day someone said to him, everyone thinks you're so pure, but you're just coming from one place to another and telling him, you know, he's doing nothing, but that's the way things happen, false seekers. And you're making politics, otherwise why you come here and then you go here? You think you're so advanced, everyone thinks you're so advanced, but now we see what's your real nature. And he looked and he said, I was always telling everyone I am not a very advanced devotee. And now they are finally realizing the truth. No sense of that within their heart. Right? I'm just thinking, so I was meditating it today in so many circumstances. In our dealings, how that sense comes up that I am not dependent, I am the controller. See, this humility, it manifests in such a beautiful sense of connection with everything. And that humility attracts the mercy of the Lord. So I was just meditating how we have to meditate on that internal consciousness in everything we do. And when we watch that sense, which is what? It's the desire not to be the angi. Not to be the unga, to be the part, but to be the unga. Not to be the object, but to be the subject. And it arises in all our dealings.
It arises when we're insulted. It arises when we're praised. It arises in so many, in envy of others. Now just, and we're going to continue this subject, because it's only a short class, and we don't have that much more time, and I do want to do some kirtan. But I'll finish it with this. Lack of self-esteem is a psychological thing. Sometimes it's God's mercy that's made our life difficult to take away our pride and allow us to connect with the soul. That may be there. I saw with my sister-in-law when she felt that dependence, I felt that's a connection with the soul. When you feel that dependence, it's a connection to the soul. But low self-esteem, you see, yeah, I wrote something on that. I'll just read it. Humble, we don't think we're great. We don't want to be great. We don't think ourselves great. And we're psychologically integrated. Because we're dependent, feeling shelter, and having love. What bhakti means, what devotion means, is placing ourselves in the right place. If you look at it cosmically, we're a particle of consciousness. And the absolute reality is called rasa vai saha. It's an exchange of energy of love. And our purpose is to be a receptacle for that. And to have that flow from our hearts. If you want love, you can't move to... Love does not mean moving in the center. Love means moving in the periphery, to the hump, and love flows, and you can feel it, that energy. So one is very happy in that position, like a child with their mother. Now, low self-esteem, you don't feel yourself great, but you want yourself to. But you think yourself not, and then you're psychologically disintegrated. Because it's coming not from the soul, it's coming. What's proud? You want to be great, you think you're great, but you're not great. And you're psychologically disintegrated. And then codependence? Codependence means what? It's... You're following not someone's needs, you're following their desires. Humility is not following the whims of some crazy person. What humility means, what codependence means is, you're linking a relationship to follow the desires of someone with the hope that that relationship makes you great. So it's where your objective is. Now, because we don't have much time, there's not much time for questions, but I can sit here and answer any of them afterwards. But now we'll do a little meditation, and it will just, I do keep on time, so I'm conscious of this. So what I'm thinking we can do now is this. I'll chant the Hare Krishna mantra, and I'll recommend two meditations. When you hear the mantra, I want you to try to feel the mantra. And what you feel for the mantra will be the soul of humility and love. Feel the vibration all over your body, and feel what you feel for that vibration, because mantra means Shabda Brahman. It means the divine in sound. And then, when you chant in response, chant in the mood that you want to serve the divine and listen to the sincerity of your mantra. And by sincerity of your mantra, you'll see that your sincerity will increase. Okay? So you'll listen to the sincerity of your mantra and you'll feel the mantra. So we can have 10 minutes of healing. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare.
Krishna, 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 Krishna.